Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Here we go. All right. We had an anniversary party 2 weeks ago. My show was taken over last week by a pirate. We're Talk Like a Pirate Day, 2 hours of awesome music. I'm glad about that. But it's my show. I'm back in action. And this is Paragon Radio. I'm Pogo Man. I'm glad to be back in the Paragon Radio new satellite where we belong at a high altitude of 0.06 feet above sea level. And I don't do this alone. I get by with a little help from my friends, especially this one. Some people say he's mad. Some people say he's a Viking. We just like to call him Mad Viking.
Nurse! Nurse!
I know how you feel, buddy. Let me tell you this morning. Holy crap. I had to get 6 injections in my spine. Oh, but we're just gonna do local injections, a local anesthesia. So you might feel it in deep tissue. Oh, I felt it.
Local means they're going to be in the same room where you can kill them.
Yes. Unfortunately, they strapped my legs down, so I couldn't jump out off the table. And then they gave me a pain journal. Well, I wrote down the following. 2 for my back, 4 for my head, and then every hour it got worse. I don't know what the fuck is going on here. Well, I didn't say it like that. I said, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm getting headaches. Apparently, you didn't realize when I said I'm a migraine sufferer, I meant I'm a migraine sufferer. And my headaches started immediately after I got off the table. To the point they were throbbing by 4 p.m., which was the last hour they wanted me to record this. So I said, well, 3 for my back and 7 for my headaches. At this point, it was time for me to eat my afternoon.
The only reason I have a voice is because of Hall.
Right. Hall's mental disc cough drops, the miracle worker for talk show hosts. Thank you. Trust me, I've been there. Yeah, he'll be sucking on them all night, folks. Sometimes I used to chew them on air and go, why sound like you're chewing? I'm like, well, I'm chewing them. Why? Because when you get to the mental lipid center, that blast of cold is like, oh, that's nice.
Oh, yes.
Sometimes you suck on waiting to get to that center. You want that cold blast right away.
No, that's when you do the old owl from the old Tootsie Roll. Let's find out. 1, 2, 3, crunch.
Chomp, 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 chomp. 3. That's all I need. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I used to eat my candy. Why? Because I needed that blast of cold. Then why didn't you just get the spray? Yes, because when you do the spray, it says only every 4 hours, and that spray really wore off real fast the second you drank anything. Even when you drank the tea with the honey and the lemon, and yeah, that didn't last that long.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of nurse, we did have the passing away recently.
Yes. I just read about it before, yes. The actress who played Nurse Ratched on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and she played some religious leader on Deep Space Nine. I forget the character's name for the last couple seasons, 2 seasons, I think. A really shallow-willed character. I hated the character. She was so manipulated, and it was just like, you know, if you weren't so weak-willed, a lot of the problems with the crew wouldn't have happened. One of the plot lines wouldn't have happened. Yeah. But they needed her to be for the plot line to move on. I understand that. It just... Anyway, that actress passed away. And it's funny, they started the article, main cast member of Deep Space Nine passed away. I'm like... And I'm like, oh, her? Really? And no offense to her, on that show, she was
Louise,
my least favorite
Louise
character.
Louise Fletcher. For those who are wondering, who is he talking about? Louise Fletcher.
Yeah, Louise Fletcher. But she was Nurse Ratched on One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, so come on.
Well, there is a younger generation. You got to think of that.
Right,
now,
right.
Now
I don't remember. I was so young when I saw that movie. I don't remember. You know, I think I only saw bits and pieces. So I got to find that movie and watch it again this week. Okay, hold on. I want your roll call now because we have a Tifa floating over. I think she remembers the character because she's shaking her head at me that how can I talk about her like that. We have Ash Wednesday. We have Pogo Spring, my sidekick. And, of course, you, Mad Viking, over in City of Heroes, heading over to the WCOC studios. Alan needs a link to the podcast. Okay, hold on. Nobody move.
Now, I found out there was another death, but this was, I would have to admit, the news article, it may as well have been one of those clickbait things. Because it wasn't a clickbait. It was actual news going,
okay.
The moral majority is dead. I'm like, what the heck?
Huh?
If you remember the movie Airplane 2, when they're starting to land at the space shuttle, she's starting to shake. And the guy's holding the milk in one hand, and then the woman wearing the moral majority T-shirt doing the shaking, then the shimmy. Well, the woman who wore that shirt passed away, Kitten Natividad. She was in some other movies by the looks of it. I'm blanking out on most of them.
I think you said The Best Little Whorehouse of Texas. That was the one with Burt Reynolds and Dolly Parton.
My Tutor, Night Patrol,
1982.
The Wildlife, Another 48 Hours.
Really?
Probably, you know, yeah. Oh, she
probably
actually
in
had...
I know, yeah.
Now, this is an exotic dancer stripper. Now,
Okay. I remember that scene. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
now,
you know what it was in that movie.
She has a movie
that's
a superhero movie.
They were killing exotic dancer strippers in that one.
She has a superhero movie, The Double D Avenger. Needless to say, I think Mystery Science Theater 3000 will be going past.
Maybe not. Maybe Riff Trax did it. I don't know.
I have a feeling
they
will go past.
Why am I looking this up? Why am I going to IMDb right now out of morbid curiosity? Why am I doing this to myself? Why am I going to IMDb?
I got caught when I saw, you know, the moral majority has died.
Why am I doing it? Okay, what a surprise. It's 2001 video. Of course it is. Oh, what a surprise. Guess what it got on IMDb?
What?
Take a guess.
Zero.
No. Higher than that.
One.
Higher.
Ooh, two.
Higher.
Three?
A little bit higher than that. Oh, okay. It got a 3.3 out of 10.
I'm surprised it got the 3.
I'm surprised it got a 3.3. Oh, my God. Hold on. It says you have to see with Joe Bob Briggs commentary on or really, really drunk. This is the first review of it. Oh, do I want to read these reviews? Oh, somebody gave it a 2. Thank heavens for Joe Bob. Somebody gave it a 4. Fun, flimsy neo-exploitation with old classic broads. Wow. That folks, these are the review. These are the headlines of the reviews. 2. I had to take a double take to see just how bad it really was. Okay, and last of the main ones. You've got to see it to believe it. Okay, well endowed. Okay, wait, let's read this one. I'm just going to read this really quick.
Oh, boy.
Well endowed
film
stars.
You're into pain now. You're into pain.
Okay, well endowed film stars Kitten Natavadad from Beneath the Valley of the Ultra Vixens, Haji from Faster Pussycat Kill Kill, and Raven Delacroix from Up battle bikini bar owner Al Purplewood and his gang of killer strippers in this silly yet sexy flick. The lighthearted picture. You know, things aren't serious when the tagline is, "She gives villains tit for tat." Oh, good Lord. Is an over-the-top adventure that wonderfully captures the sci-fi silliness and bawdy humor of Russ Meyer's classic work from the 1960s and early 70s. It's all in good fun. There's admittedly a ton of suggestive material, but there's no nudity. And director, writer, producer William Winkler does a good job emulating the not-so-subtle nuances of the Russ Meyer milieu. Filmed in booby vision, it's definitely worth a look. Like the best of Meyer's works. You've just got to see it to believe it. Huh?
Like
somebody
said,
gave it a 10 out of 10? Wait, somebody gave it a 10 out of 10. Dennis Harvey of Variety loved it, and so do I. Dennis Harvey, respected film critic for Variety, the top Hollywood trade publication, gave the Double D Avenger a very positive film review in 2001, and I fully agree with his opinion. He stated in his written review for Variety that the movie was a cheerfully silly ode to larger-than-life femininity. Essentially, the movie is the one and only reunion film of Russ Meyer's famous stars. It's a silly, fun little farce, a total low-budget spoof. It is not a pornographic film. It is a Benny Hill-type Z-grade comedy. Okay.
Like I said,
the film's been a huge financial success for the producer. I'm just summing this up. If you want to watch a happy, goofy, fun B-movie, this is it. If you're looking for a porn or softcore or expecting a $200 million Hollywood epic, look elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm still saying Mystery Science Theater 3000 is going to say pass.
I don't know. I'm trying to see. It was released September 17th, 2001. I'm just trying to see, like, I'm actually trying to see, like, how much they spent on it, how much money this movie made, but.
Now, I want to point out,
yeah, not
an Oscar-winning actress passed away, and what are we paying more attention?
Well, come on. You know, as soon as we heard about this, well, hold on, because it's a superhero movie, we already know about her. We can look at Beast Things 9 is on every day on BBC America. We're talking about a superhero movie we've never heard of. We're giving it proper respect.
I think it's going to give a cue to the Bunny Night movie night crew since they like to watch, bad movies, but at the same time, I don't know if
Vixen,
it'll be that
Masquerade.
Bad.
Hold on, Vixen, Masquerade. For your watching pleasure, we offer up the Double D Avenger. God help us! And this is where they come after us right after the movie, when we play House of Pain Jump, they're going to jump on our heads, and I'm running for my life. Yeah, to take it seriously, you didn't have to take it seriously. Okay, in the WCOC theater roll call. Silver Egret, Mordecai, and Alan and the Teddysons, Mr. Nom Nom and Clarence. And, of course, us. Did anybody else join us? Nope. Okay. If anybody wants to call in tonight and give their cinematic, good Lord, I can't talk, cinematic opinions.
You want the ball?
We're not being serious about the Double D Avenger. You call in 714-583-6908. Again, that call-in number is 714-583-6908, whether you're in City of Heroes or Champions Online. Oh, and Friday, by the way, in Champions Online, there is the monthly Dev costume contest that we love oh so much. The theme, party animal. I guess you have to dress like a fur, and the theme is party. What's so funny? I get, you know, it's one of those things that they love so much. Oh, Mordecai's Double D Avenger, Daredevil, Pamela Anderson. Oh no, I don't know. I still remember Stripperella. Remember the cartoon that they had on TV?
And that was promoted by Stan Lee.
I know. That's what's cracking me up. And it was animated. I remember once I was watching it. My nephew came in and he's trying to peek, and I'm like, no, I don't try to hold my hands. He's trying, and then my stepsister, his mom would. I'm like, oh God, she's gonna come down any second. I'm doing a countdown. I didn't get to two. What do you have on TV that he's watching? I'm like, no, I didn't know he was gonna come down here. It's not like a thing. And she's standing watching. Goes, is that Stanley and Pamela Anderson? What? It's Stripperella. It's on Spike TV. She's supposed to be a superhero. There's no nudity. She goes, oh, I've heard of this. He's making it like you're watching a nudie. He's saying you're watching a nudie like cartoon. I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm not even watching it right now. I'm recording it for later. I'm just listening to it. She goes,
you're going to find this movie. You're going to find this movie. You're going to put yourself through punishment. I know it.
Well, you know what's funny? I watched Six String Samurai again. I've seen it before. And I was like, I watched it with friends years ago. We didn't think it was that bad. It's not that bad of a movie.
Yeah, but, I mean, come on. This one, I'm putting money on
this
that.
This one, I know. I know. I might have to. Hopefully I won't be able to find it. Hold on. Let me go to IMDb. Maybe it's one of those things that, like, nobody shows it.
Which means YouTube has it for free.
That's what I'm worried about. Is it available on Amazon? Oh, no, it's not available on Prime Video, thank God. Oh, my God. Somebody's selling a copy on DVD for $34.21.
I'm thinking maybe the price went up.
Oh my God! Somebody's selling a copy on DVD for $194.95
because of the death of the actress.
Maybe, but no.
I would put more money into the airplane too.
Yes. All right. Enough of this silliness. We got news to get to.
For some reason, I was kind of waiting for rain to pop on and go, I knew it. I'm away for a while. Look at what you two were talking about. I was waiting for it.
Double D, I'm the Triple D Avenger. What are you all talking about? You know she'd say that.
I know the real numbers.
Okay. Quadruple, never mind. I don't want to know.
I am a gentleman still.
And I'm not asking.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'm very distracted tonight, by the way, too. Not the Double D. It's Yankees are playing. Aaron Judge is still just home runs. And my New York Giants are playing Dallas at home tonight on Monday Night Football. You're sick. Why are we doing this show tonight? I don't know. Oh, for the love of the fans. For the love of you guys. So let's start with the news, shall we? All right. So, the Titans, you know, the DC show that's still on, the showrunner confirms Titus Welliver, I hope I said that name right, is going to play Lex Luthor in season 4. Ooh. So, after being referenced numerous times throughout Titans' first three seasons, viewers will finally be able to put a face to the name Lex Luthor, starting in season four. While speaking with Entertainment Weekly, showrunner Greg Walker confirmed that Titus Welliver will appear in several upcoming episodes as Superman's longtime nemesis. Welliver is probably best known for his starring turn on Amazon's Bosch and his new spinoff, Bosch Legacy. He's also remembered for his recurring appearances on Lost, Deadwood, and Sons of Anarchy. Additionally, Welliver has booked a few superhero projects in the past. He showed up in three episodes of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Agent Felix Blake. More recently, he visited the DC Universe as the voice of Carmine Falcone in WB's Batman, the Long Halloween animated adaptation. During the interview, Walker recalled his early conversations with Welliver about Titan's plans for Lex's introduction. But luckily, the actor didn't have much to do much research after being cast because he was already a massive DC fan. You usually have to do this whole dog and pony show to get an actor to do the show, said Walker, but when I called to kind of lure him in, I could barely get a word in. We were talking on the phone, and he was just walking through his library telling me about all his Wolf and Perez Titan editions. He's a giant, giant fan. He'd watched every episode of the show and could tell me about certain stories, certain shots. It was the most unexpected call I've ever had. Walker also discussed what Lex's arrival means for Connor / Superboy, played by Joshua Orpin, who made his own Titans debut in Season 2, after he was created from a mix of Superman and Luthor's DNA. We're really going deeper in all these characters and shaking them up, added Walker. What shakes Connor up is an identity story. He's explored Superman's self, but he has not really explored his Lex self. What does that mean when you do? What happens when you give the self the keys to the car? Does it start driving the wrong way at rush hour 100 miles an hour? Well, we'll have to find out. But Titans Season 4 will premiere on HBO Max sometime in November. Stay tuned to find out. All right. Captain America 4 director drops hints about the leader's role. So I guess we know he's going to be in the movie. The Incredible Hulk was the second movie in the MCU, but it also had the longest lingering plot line. Tim Blake Nelson's Samuel Stearns was last seen on the floor and infected by gamma radiation as he transformed into the leader. As far as we know, the leader has spent over a decade biding his time. But over the weekend at D23, Kevin F., announced that Nelson will reprise his role as the leader in Captain America: New World Order. Now, director Julius Ona is dropping some hints about the leader's role in the sequel. Via Screen Rant, Ona indicated the new film will be a paranoid thriller. He also said the leader will be more than a match for Sam Wilson's Captain America. We were all paranoid, and hopefully we're all thrilled as well, said Ona. This is a movie, like the previous Captain America movies, that leans into the tradition of this genre. And what's so great in this film is Sam Wilson has an incredible adversary in the leader, played by Tim Blake Nelson, this brilliant mastermind who's always one, two, three, four steps ahead. I think audiences, as they watch the film, will never be able to see what's coming right around the corner. It's possible that the leader is already making his presence known in the MCU. The third episode of She-Hulk Attorney at Law hinted that someone hired the Wrecking Crew to steal Jennifer Walters' blood. If said person is a Hulk villain from the comics, the leader is an obvious choice, but for now, it's far from certain. Anthony Mackie will headline New World Order as Sam Wilson, with Carl Lumbly as Isaiah Bradley and Daniel Ramirez as Joaquin Torres. Shira Haas has also been cast as the Israeli superhero Sabra. Captain America: New World Order will hit theaters on May 3rd, 2024.
Now that's interesting. On the Israeli superhero, mainly because I do know the character, and they kind of only bring you know, that area out only when the news comes around that affects the area.
Right. So maybe they're going to Israel. You know, new world order. It's not like new U.S. order.
No, I mean,
so they're traveling.
Last one I remember was like beginning of the Iraq War is when you saw that particular hero heroine, as well as a few of the Arab superheroes.
Right. And Sam Wilson does have military experience over there. I mean, that's how they said he got his his training with those wings.
Right.
Because remember, he's going to have the wings and the shield. That's his costume
right
now. So will be interesting if he knows Sabra from his dealings over there. Very interesting. We'll have to wait and see.
So I will give a kudos to Cannon. Kudos to Cannon on that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't see her that often in the books either, so that'll be cool. That's cool. And the leader's coming finally. So,
now, see,
Walking Dead news.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Before I get to Walking Dead. No.
I was about to say here how you were building up here. If they try to pull the leader of the fourth wall breaker, that's what I would call shenanigans. So I'm like, yeah, you thought I was waiting for another hook. I just had a picture of the leader looking to the people watching the movie going like, you thought I was waiting for another Hulk movie, wasn't you?
That would be funny. That would be funny if he pulls that. That would be good. He might appear at the end of the She-Hulk series. I'm two episodes behind, so he might appear in a post-credit scene at the end of the She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to wait and see. Because remember, at the end of... I don't know if anybody's... At the end of Ms. Marvel, Captain Marvel, she appears. Towards the end of the last episode.
She-Hulk
I don't want to say how
Hulk
wide,
Hulk Ling. No. The Hulk Ling is a Skrull.
Right. He's not a real Hulk. Is he a Hulk? It's hard
but
to explain.
Hulk
yeah.
Ling may appear with the Secret Wars.
Right. Which is another series coming up.
Time for another haul.
Okay. While you do that, as I said, The Walking Dead finale could include a post-credit scene. The end is near for The Walking Dead, as the show will soon air the final 8 episodes of season 11. Although the production is nearly complete, there are ongoing conversations about the last scene. While speaking with Entertainment Weekly, The Walking Dead Chief Content Officer Scott Gimple mentioned the possibility of a post-credit scene. Will there be a tag scene? I just got to say maybe. We're up to some things, so maybe. Gimple said, honestly, we're literally just working right now on a couple of things. So there are a couple of ways it could go. A post-credit scene would not be unheard of in the zombie universe. In the series finale of The Walking Dead World Beyond, a mid-credit scene revealed video journals from Dr. Edwin Jenner, in which he inquired about variants to a French scientist in Paris. As a female scientist watches the video, a man shoots her, claiming the outbreak was her fault. According to Gimple, this scene sets up Daryl Dixon's spinoff series, which will take place in France. Well, how does he get there? Did the final scene tease another spinoff? With two more spinoffs in development, The Walking Dead, Dead City, and the untitled Rick and Michonne spinoff, a post-credit scene from either series might be the perfect way to set up a new story. Either way, the flagship series will end on November 20th, and fans will have to wait until then to see what happens. The Walking Dead Season 11, Part 3, premieres on October 2nd on AMC. So even though the main series is ending, all these spinoffs are happening.
Good.
Okay, so the CW's Gotham Knights series officially starts production. As gamers all the world prepare for the release of Gotham Knights on next-gen consoles next month, there's still the matter of that other upcoming DC project that shares the same name. Last year, the CW greenlit a new TV series with a similar premise of having Batman's surrogate children become Gotham City's defenders in the wake of the Dark Knight's death. However, the heroes gracing the small screen look very different from the video game counterparts. And now that the show has moved past the pilot stage, it's time for their story to begin in earnest. Some of the filmmakers behind the Gotham Knights recently took to social media to announce that, what day was this? That Tuesday, September 13th, yes, we're going back that far, marked the official start of production on the first season's remaining episodes. Co-creator Natalie Abrams, co-executive producer Jeffrey Hunt, and star Tyler DeChiara are among those who shared new posts on Twitter and Instagram to celebrate. Okay, so it was posted below, Natalie Abrams, day one of production on Gotham Knights, let's do this, and you see a chair that says Gotham Knights behind it. Oscar Morgan headlines Gotham Knights as Turner Hayes, the adopted son of Bruce Wayne. When his father is suddenly killed and his secret identity is exposed to the world, Gotham erupts into chaos. The GCPD soon brings in three suspects in Bruce's murder case, all of whom proclaim their innocence. But when Turner becomes a person of interest himself, he goes on the run with the others in an attempt to clear their names. The first trailer for Gotham Knights premiered online in May, mere weeks after filming wrapped on its pilot episode. Unfortunately, most fans weren't impressed by what they saw. Many viewers decried the series' overtly teen-centric tone, along with the changes to familiar Batman characters, like Carrie Kelly, played by Navia Robinson, and Harvey Dent, played by Misha Collins. But this didn't stop the CW from ordering the project to series earlier this year. It's also worth pointing out that cameras are beginning to roll just 1 month after Nexstar Media Group acquired a majority stake in the network, which might put the future of its DC programming in question. For now, however, things are moving forward as planned, and Gotham Knights will premiere on the CW sometime in 2023. Okay, so back to Marvel news. Ant-Man 3 scribe Jeff Loveness will write Avengers: The Kang Dynasty. Marvel fans will have to wait until early next year to see how Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, turns out. However, Marvel Studios is already showing a lot of faith in Quantumania's screenwriter Jeff Loveness. Via Deadline, Loveness has signed on to write the next Avengers movie, Avengers: The Kang Dynasty. Outside of the MCU, Loveness is best known for his work on Rick and Morty, Jimmy Kimmel Live, and Miracle Workers. As the writer of Quantumania, Loveness will have the first chance to flesh out Kang the Conqueror in the MCU. Jonathan Majors briefly portrayed a variant of Kang in the Loki series finale, and he will reprise his role for both Quantumania and the Kang Dynasty. Late last month, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings helmer Destin Daniel Cretton was signed to direct the Kang Dynasty. With Loveness and Cretton on board, that just leaves the creative team to be filled on Avengers Secret Wars. Both the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars are set to close out Marvel's Phase 6 movies. However, many of the films in that phase remain unannounced for now. Avengers: The Kang Dynasty will hit theaters on May 2nd, 2025. Okay, back to DC. We're just flip-flopping here. We're giving equal opportunity. Warner Brothers, wow, you're not going to believe this one. They're developing a new Constantine movie for Keanu Reeves. So back in 2005, Keanu Reeves headlined Constantine, the first ever live-action portrayal of DC's John Constantine. However, the film failed to ignite the box office and finished with only $76 million domestic and $230 million worldwide. Regardless, the movie was largely embraced by Reeves fans and does have a cult following. Now, it may also have a sequel. Deadline is reporting that Warner Brothers is developing a new Constantine movie for Reeves to reprise his leading role after nearly two decades. Additionally, Reeves will reteam with his original Constantine director, Francis Lawrence. That was also Lawrence's first feature film, and he subsequently helmed I Am Legend, Water for Elephants, Red Sparrow, and the majority of the Hunger Games movies. J.J. Abrams and Hannah Mangella are producing the film through Bad Robot in association with Akiva Goldsman's Weed Road Pictures. Goldsman is also slated to write the screenplay. The involvement of Abrams is somewhat surprising because he was developing a Constantine TV series for HBO Max. Reeves' return to the role suggests that HBO Max project probably won't happen now. John Constantine was created by Alan Moore, Stephen R. Bissett, Rick Veitch, and John Turturro as a cynical British street magician slash mystic. He was initially a supporting character in Swamp Thing before headlining his own series, Hellblazer. In 2014, if you remember, NBC produced a single season of Constantine TV series with Matt Ryan in the leading role. Ryan has subsequently reprised his role as Constantine in several Arrowverse series, most notably in Legends of Tomorrow. He also lent his voice to the character's appearances in DC's animated films. However, Ryan stepped down from the role ahead of the final season of Legends of Tomorrow. Warner Brothers hasn't officially announced a new Constantine movie yet, and there's no release information at this time. And now for something completely different. No, it's not Monty Python news, sorry. But Invincible actor says season 2 is complete and season 3 has begun. Upon its release, Invincible quickly became a widespread sensation as the story of Mark Grayson slash Invincible, voiced by Steven Yeun, received acclaim from critics and fans. After the season 1 finale streamed in April 2021, Amazon renewed the animated series for 2 additional seasons. With no date or plot details announced, updates on the upcoming seasons have been few and far between. However, Cary Payton, who voices Marcus Grimshaw slash Black Samson, revealed a huge update on the show's progress. In an interview with the Movie Dweeb, Payton shared the good news of Season 2's completion and a promising development for Season 3. "We finished Season 2. We're on to Season 3, said Payton, but it's so hard to say right now. There was a glut of animation studios just trying to get so much done, and literally it was like projects sitting there with a backpack full of material. They're like, anytime you're ready." Before Payton's interview, the last major information came in the form of a video from Yoon in a recording studio on the show's Twitter account in April 2022. The prolonged gap between seasons can be attributed to delays from animation studios, which was recently a subject of controversy at Marvel. But Payton says the time off could be a good thing in the long run. "I'm so glad that he greenlit 2 and 3 at the same time, because that means when 3 comes out, it will feel like just next season, not like a lifetime," said Payton. Invincible Seasons 2 and 3 are currently without a release date. All episodes of Season 1, though, are on Amazon Prime Video. Just give me a second. I think I have to jump. Sorry about that. I'm just checking the studio. See if we have any callers. Checking the chat. George Mosley has joined us in the studio, in the chat. Hello, George. Thank you for joining us.
All right. I should mention this while we still have some people listening here. We have news on Hurricane Ian. Yes, the latest path here is going to be skirting from, it's going to be a major hurricane affecting Florida big way, but we'll be cutting across from central West Florida going to the northeast from Wednesday to Friday. That's the bad news. The The worst news is Jim Cantore of the Weather Channel is already in Clearwater Beach. Those who know the Weather Channel knows if Jim Cantore's in your area, run.
It's bad. Just go. He only covers the bad. He only covers the worst of the worst.
Let's put it this way. They had people in New York. It says, like, oh, the Weather Channel's here. Who do they bring in? Jim Cantore? Oh, Jesus Christ,
run!
Hurricane Sandy.
Run! Run!
Turns to Superstorm Sandy.
That's right. We were screwed.
All right.
How's your voice holding?
Like I said, I'm taking Halls like candy.
Okay.
I got the cherry one.
Well, that's good. That's good. Okay, I'll keep reading these stories till 9. Whatever I don't go through this week, we'll do next week, because 9 o'clock, it's time to go to the tome for the tomb. No, the tomb
right.
for the tome.
Right.
Anyway, I screwed that up. The tomb for the tome. Right. I got it right the second time. It's been a couple weeks since I said that, see? All right. So, Marvel news again. Loki, season 2. They're promoting Eugene Cordero to a season regular. I know you're going to ask who that is in a moment, but we'll get there. So the first season finale of Loki thrust Tom Hiddleston's semi-reformed trickster god into a new timeline where not even his friend Mobius knew who he was. But at least Loki will have some familiar faces at the TVA offices in season 2. Deadline is reporting that actor Eugene Cordero has been promoted to series regular for Loki season 2. He will reprise his role as Casey, a low-level desk jockey for the Time Variance Authority. However, the Casey of this new timeline may not be the same man he was before. Deadline notes that Cordero's character in the season finale was credited as Hunter K-5E. Cordero was a leading voice role as Lieutenant Rutherford in Star Trek Lower Decks. He is also a series regular on Tacoma FD. Cordero's other TV credits include appearances in House of Lies, Other Space, Bajillion Dollar Properties, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, Wrecked, and The Good Place. In film, Cordero has appeared in Kong, Skull Island, and The Mule. Cordero's most recent movie was Easter Sunday, a comedy film with Joe Coy in the lead. Story details about the new season of Loki remain scarce. Regardless, Owen Wilson will be back as Mobius M. Mobius, alongside Gugu Mbatha-Raw as Ravonna Renslayer, Sophia Di Martino as Sylvie, and Tara Strong as the voice of Miss Minutes. Ki-Hoi Kwan and Raphael Casal will join the cast in season 2. So far, there's no word on whether Jonathan Majors Kang will appear. Majors guest starred as a variant of Kang, He Who Remains, in the first season finale. It was his death that led to the Marvel multiverse. Eric Martin is writing all 6 episodes of Loki season 2, which will be directed by Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. Disney Plus hasn't set a season premiere yet, but is expected to return in mid-2023. I can't wait that long. Okay, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. The new Pinhead rises in Hulu's first Hellraiser trailer. With more than a few less than stellar sequels under its belt, yeah, no kidding, the Hellraiser franchise is hoping to attract fresh blood next month with a brand new movie premiering exclusively on Hulu. Following in the footsteps of Clive Barker's original horror classic, it is no easy feat, but the first full-length Hellraiser trailer makes a convincing case that the film is in good hands. Okay, I'll give the link for the story, and you guys can check out the trailer. The preview wastes no time in getting the nostalgia flowing. In fact, the very first shot of the trailer shows the infamous lament configuration, otherwise known as a puzzle box, sitting on a pedestal. When Garan... Okay, oh, good Lord. Mysterious Mr. Void encourages a hapless victim to solve it. The latter gets more than he bargained for when the box summons an army of Cenobites. from their otherworldly dimension. Odessa Azian headlines the film as Riley, a young woman with a history of addiction who eventually comes into possession of the box herself. But the real star of the show is Jamie Clayton, who succeeds Doug Bradley, Stephen Smith Collins, and Paul T. Taylor as the latest actor to assume the role of Pinhead. In fact, Pinhead has been the face of the Hellraiser series since the first movie bowed in 1987. Clayton's casting marks the first time that a woman has played the lead Cenobite. But based on her menacing baritone and creepy character design, she shouldn't have any problem scaring new and old fans alike. David Bruckner of The Ritual directed Hellraiser from a screenplay by Ben Collins and Luke Piotrowski, both of whom came up with the story alongside David S. Goyer. The supporting cast includes Brandon Flynn, Drew Starkey, Adam Faison, Hines, God, that's a weird name, Selena Lowe, and Chaim Abbas. Barker is also working on the film as a producer. Hellraiser will arrive on Hulu on October 7th. So before we go any further, I'm going to put this in coalition chat on COH. And I will put it in local here. And then over in champions, I'll put it in local. And I'll put it in Dawn Radio for everybody. They can check out the trailer. I haven't checked it out yet myself, but there you go. Enjoy. Okay, I just went in date order on these, so more Walking Dead news of a sort. Norman Reedus is to receive a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. As the Walking Dead fan favorite Daryl Dixon, Norman Reedus has been a model of consistency, holding the record for most appearances on the show. In addition to his role as Daryl, Reedus gave memorable performances in the likes of The Boondock Saints and Blade 2. For his contributions to the industry, Variety reported that Reedus will be honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. The 53-year-old will receive a star in the television category on September 27, 2022. That's tomorrow. This marks the 2,734th to be awarded by the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Fans will be able to watch the ceremony at 11:30 Pacific time on walkoffame.com. That's 11:30 server time or 2:30 Eastern. The end is near for the legendary zombie series as the final 8 episodes of The Walking Dead begins its run on October 2nd with a 2-episode premiere. The week prior, AMC will air the first 16 episodes of season 11 in succession starting September 25th. Well, that was yesterday. Well, thanks for telling us ahead of time. Additionally, the marathon ends with a special episode of Talking Dead where Chris Hardwick will preview the final 8 episodes. Joining Hardwick will be showrunner, executive producer Angela Kang and actor Cooper Andrews, who plays Jerry. The Walking Dead concludes its run on November 20th. However, Reedus will return in a spinoff centered around Daryl, which will arrive sometime in 2023. Okay, Marvel news. Marvel lines up writers for the Fantastic Four reboot film. And I shake my head at this one. They line up writers for the Fantastic Four reboot film. Yes, you heard me about this one. At D23 Expo earlier this month, Kevin F. confirmed that WandaVision helmer Matt Shackman will bring Marvel's Fantastic Four back to the big screen. Now Deadline is reporting that Marvel has lined up Jeff Kaplan and Ian Springer to write the script. And according to Deadline, Kaplan and Springer actually signed on to the project before Shackman did. The report notes that Kaplan and Springer, quote unquote, have been outlining where this next series of films will fit into the Marvel Cinematic Universe alongside Marvel Studios president Kevin F. And since Shackman joined the film, he and the writers are now, quote-unquote, aligning their visions before starting the script. Kaplan and Springer have only a few credits to their name, but they are co-writing Warner Brothers comedy film Disaster Wedding for Palm Springs director Max Barbacow. Oh, good Lord. Why does it sound like it's going to be a disaster?
All right. It's a novel idea, but it just might work. These four people...
Three people,
and one happens to
I'm
be a brother.
I'm not done reading, but okay, right.
They help build a spaceship that the government turns down for launching. They go into the spaceship, go up anyway, and get caught in cosmic rays. I am going into my Lewis Black mode. What's the problem with this?
Oh, so you mean they're going to read the source material first and go off of that? Like all the other Marvel movies that work? Because I'll tell you what, the last movie, that guy didn't do that at fuck at all. He said, fuck the source material. I'm going to do something half-assed that doesn't make any sense to anybody. No. You know what I loved about? Some guy on YouTube explained the movie perfectly, why it didn't make sense. There was a beginning and an end, and there was no fucking middle to the movie. It was like origin, ending. There was no middle to the movie. It's like, excuse me, you cut out the middle part of the movie. That makes sense. It was like origin, final battle. That's it. That's all you people need. It's like, yeah, we're missing the setup for the fight. You don't need that shit as a comic book. You don't need that shit at all. You don't read the middle part of the book anyway.
You know, this would also
did you watch the other Marvel movies that made fucking sense?
This would also explain the invention of unstable molecules, which is part of the reason their costumes work the way they do.
Like, did this guy just watch the Harvey Korman Fantastic Four from the 90s and base off of that? And go, I'm gonna make this better than that. Like, why did you watch the two previous movies? And, like, you know.
I mean, I'll give credit to somewhere to do. Okay, it was a little bit of a twist. But the 90s version, you know.
I still haven't seen that one.
At least they were in
one of my
space.
Friends, one of my friends said the special effects for that one was so horrible. It was just, no. I heard about it. I was like, oh, my God.
I will give credit to the camaraderie. They got that down on the 90s version.
Yes. Just follow the damn script. Just follow the source material. Look at Iron Man. They follow the source material. I got it right. Batman Begins. They follow the source material. They got it fucking right. Captain America. They follow the source material. They got it fucking right. Thor. Pretty much the same thing. A couple of twists, but still.
We can understand, Iron Man, they substituted the Korean War with
you
can live with that,
right? Right, it makes sense that way, but good God, you changed everything. I didn't recognize that Fantastic Four. My stepsister, who's never read a Fantastic Four comic book, she came home that night. So what'd you think? She goes, I call it the Fantastic Snore. I was like, oh, I got to use that line on the show tomorrow. I got to use that line tonight on the show. She went Thursday for a preview. She's like, I got to use that line. That's when Tony V was co-hosting. I was like, Tony, my stepsister saw the movie. She goes, what'd she think? She goes, she calls it the Fantastic Snore. He goes, oh, you got to use that line. I'm like, oh, I'm already using it.
That's why some people went on the air about the She-Hulk, because they did. She-Hulk was not shot by mafia that she was going to put into court. No, it was a Sicarian spaceship accident with a car, and a drops of blood got in. It was like, no,
Right.
It would have been much more interesting.
You know what? But it makes sense for the show because they were looking for the Hulk. Because I think that's setting up the Secret Wars or the next show.
You still
right.
could have blended that in.
It was going after. Right. Because he mentions that. He mentions that later on. He goes, she mentions that later on in the episode. Like, what's up with that? What was that? It was a Zakari ship. They were looking for me. They needed my help with something. Okay, they all did that, but that worked. Because they explained that. It was like, I was like, what the hell? Or in episode two, they explained the Zakari ship. I was like, what the hell is up with that?
Yeah, but right out of the gate, the mob bosses. Okay, guess what? That's a quick throw into the kingpin.
Right.
They're so desperately to bring in Daredevil, bring in Kingpin.
Right. Right, right. But you know what it is? I think the Shikari, it was a way for the Hulk to get cut open. I think that was a quicker way for them to do the whole thing without having to go to the hospital. And it's only a half-hour show.
I think people would have lived through a two-part intro. We have done it before.
Oh, I know. I think they wouldn't have done that. By the way, you know Andor came out this weekend?
Okay.
They said, I swear to God, Thursday and Friday, I saw Andor coming out. I think Thursday and Friday, they said Andor coming out soon.
Ooh.
And then Sunday, Andor, three-parter came out this weekend. I'm like, what? Like, wait a minute, I heard coming out soon. Like, I thought, like, next weekend. I'm like, I missed the three-parter.
It was real soon.
Yeah, like, you could have said, like, well, how soon? Tomorrow. Like, gee, thanks. So now I'm behind on that. I'm behind on Rings of Power, and I'm 2 weeks behind She-Hulk.
Well, you are in time, though, for you to go to the tomb.
Yes, I'm going to the tomb to get the tome. Okay. Oh, look at that. They brought it to me. I have it. Hold on a minute. We're missing a bookmark. Nope, I found it. Okay.
Okay.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen. Many times throughout comic book history, as we've talked about, we have wonderful superheroes. The X-Men. The Avengers. The good version of
AFK.
Fantastic Four. Not the movie version, obviously. All the cool heroes you like. The Justice League. The JSA. Bring them back already. Any of the bad teams. You know. The good heroes. And then you got these guys. The ones you shake your head at and go, what the bleep were they thinking? Half-baked heroes from comic book history. Or, as we like to call them, the League of Regrettable Superheroes. Spanning the Golden Age, the Silver Age, and the Modern Age. We're going to start with our Golden Age entry for the week, kids. This one was created again by Otto Binder and Sheldon Moldoff. You know, I swear, these two guys' names have come up more often than the Golden Age. Like, get an idea that works already. And this debuted in Hit Comics number 25 of Quality Comics in December 1942. Notable shortcomings... Well, he wears white after Labor Day and is dead. I guess so. His quote is, Eternity! I speak of none other than Kid Eternity. A few my tongue doesn't want to read this already. Few superheroes gain their powers as the result of a clerical error, but then there's Kid Eternity. While still a boy, Kid, his real name is never revealed, becomes the victim of Nazi aggression when a U-boat sinks his grandfather's ship, heavy with its cargo of rubber and crude oil, taking with it all hands. Their bodies are recovered by a patrolling American destroyer. But the next time we see the kid and his grandpa, they're among the Elysian fields of eternity. Concerning grandpa and the rest of the crew, there's no problem. In the fatalistic universe of Kid Eternity, the dates and methods of every human death are preordained, so the recently snuffed sailors were expected. Not the kid, though. Thanks to a celestial bookkeeping error, the first in 2 million years, the kid passed away before his time. He wasn't scheduled to shuffle off the mortal coil for another 75 years. It's disheartening to imagine that bureaucratic errors persist into the afterlife, but at least the powers that be make it up to the kid, in spades. First, they return him to his human body. No mean feat, considering he has to be recovered from a burial at sea. And their largesse doesn't end there. The kid is granted tremendous supernatural powers. With a shout of his magic word, Eternity, he could switch between his mortal and ghostly forms, perform feats of pure magic, and summon the greatest figures of history, myth, and fiction to his beck and call. Guiding the underage superhero in his mission against crime is Mr. Keeper, the portly desk jockey whose error resulted in the kid's unscheduled kicking of the bucket. Together, the pair proved popular enough to score the kid a title of his own. In addition to his appearance in hit comics, over the course of his solo run, the kid's powers narrow in scope. His magic word originally gave him nearly limitless abilities, but eventually his power set was limited to transitioning between mortal and ghost and summoning of notable shades, including fictional ones. Still, the latter abilities served him well, and when he was in a jam, Kid E summoned everyone from Paul Bunyan and Hercules to Newt Rockne and Robin Hood. Unexpected choices include prohibitionist Carrie Nation, always an asset when you have to throw down with a gang of hoodlums, and fellow Quality Comics character Blackhawk. Kid Eternity's opposite number was Master Man, a reform school thug who could summon the most evil figures of myth in history by hollering his own magic word, Stygia. Apparently, the infernal alternative to this cosmology is Divine Eternity. Among these more dangerous, like the Sinister Kali or the Wretched Dr. Payne, was a pair of lady con artists called Her Highness and Silk, who became so popular that they graduated to a feature of their own. By the early 1950s, Kid Eternity's popularity faded, bringing him, or at least his book, the death he'd evaded years before. Although he's been resilient enough to survive a few revivals since, none of the kid's appearances have earned him superstardom. If Kid Eternity wants a second life as an A-list hero, he better hurry up. His 75-year reprieve is almost over. There you go. So I guess he didn't do that bad.
I actually think Kid Eternity passed the Golden Age and slipped into the Silver Age a couple of times. I want to say
perhaps.
I remember, you know, him being mentioned around the first Crisis.
Huh. It's a possibility.
Or someone's sharing the name, maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
Wouldn't work today because how dare you bring up history?
Yeah, I know, right? Don't you dare bring up the Silver Age nowadays.
Or any kind of history for that matter.
I know, God forbid. Jeez. Okay. Our Silver Age entry. This one was created by familiar names of the Silver Age, Jerry Siegel and Paul Reinman. This one debuted in Mighty Comics number 43, or Archie Comics, February 1967. Unused alternate identities, Wonder Wife, Mystery Mate, and Super Spouse.
Oh, no.
The quote, "I swore to stick to you, sweetie, till death do us part. The name of this character? Pow Girl. God help me. For the most part, costume tag-alongs come in a handful of common varieties. Young ward, younger brother or sister, devoted girlfriend, even well-trained pet. But only Archie Comics' yellow and green hero, known as the Web, had his wife as a sidekick. And didn't even know it. Dressing up in the Web's colorful costume, criminology professor John Raven had a lengthy career as a crime fighter. Throughout the campy 1960s superhero revival, Raymond was hectored about his costume career, both by his wife, Rose, who dreaded seeing her beloved husband come to any harm, and by Rose's domineering mother, who was concerned that her daughter would be left a widow. Billed as the pen-hecked hero, the Web faced battles both on the streets and in the home. Rose's concern for Raymond's safety grew so severe that she fabricated a costumed identity of her own to keep an eye on him. Taking gymnastics and martial arts classes on the sly, housewife Rose trained her body to a physical peak and created an alter ego. "Since my darling insists on taking crazy chances as the Web," she explains, "somebody's got to look out after her safety. And that certain somebody will be Pow Girl." A refreshing element about Pow Girl was that her creators resisted the temptation to give her girl-themed weapons, an unfortunate and patronizing staple of many female superheroes from the Golden Age through the 1960s camp revival. Instead of such accessories as weaponized powder puffs or titanium sewing needles, Pow Girl got the job done with old-fashioned fisticuffs. Pow Girl makes only a single appearance in the comics, but she accomplishes a lot in just a little time. When the Web is overwhelmed by the combined onslaught of assorted no-goodniks, Pow Girl swings in and saves the day. Comics being what they are, the Web is unable to detect Pow Girl's true identity. Instead, he congratulates the unknown heroine on her successful debut. "I guess the world will be hearing a lot about you from now on," he tells the stranger. Rose returns home in advance for her heroic husband, who nonetheless is remanded to sleeping on the couch. "Strangely enough, I enjoyed being Pow Girl," she noted after her solo venture. "Could it be," she asks, "I'll continue in action in my secret identity?" The answer was that no. In fact, Pow Girl would not continue. She disappeared after this debut. Presumably, the Web never tumbled to his wife's secret identity. And there you have it for Pow Girl. Which brings us to our modern age entry. This one was created by Martin Grim, G-R-E-I-M. This one debuted in Charlton Bullseye number 6 of Charlton Comics in March 1982. This hero's other career options were delivering Easter eggs, outsmarting hunters with speech impediments. His quote, "I have great power, but I've become a rabbit to use it. I don't know if being a superhero is worth it. I speak of none other than the wascally rabbit superhero, Thunder Bunny." Why do I have a feeling you've read this one? The long-lasting appeal of superheroes can be attributed, at least in part, to their inherent escapism, especially for young readers. Kids can imagine themselves decked out in a colorful costume and possessing all those wonderful powers, gadgets, and skills. Some heroes, like the original Captain Marvel, capitalize on that sense of wonder by having the hero transform from a child into a superpower champion. Such a transformation happens to Bobby Caswell, adolescent comic book fan, when he stumbles across a crashed spaceship, the ship's sole denizen, the last survivor of a doomed civilization, passes on to Bobby the power of his planet's greatest hero. All Bobby must do is concentrate, clap his hands, and he is transformed into a giant pink rabbit clad in spandex. It's an absurd turn of events, though, not a completely raw deal. While inhabiting the form of Thunder Bunny, Bobby gains tremendous strength, is invulnerable to harm, and can move and fly with the speed of lightning. The one drawback, aside from looking like Bugs Bunny on steroids, the longer he remains in Thunder Bunny's impressive cartoon-headed form, the more difficult it is to return to his human self. Bobby Caswell runs the risk of becoming an anthropomorphic bunny for life. Bobby's superheroic career straddled an impressive line between spoof and homage. Facing foes like Dr. Fogg, Snaka, an evil snake sporting cybernetic arms, and the robotic Big Cam, C-A-M. He also found the opportunity to team up with fellow superheroes, the Mighty Crusaders, the Thunder Agents, and even an assortment of obscure Golden Age heroes like Pat Parker, War Nurse, and Magic Man. Thunder Bunny was one rabbit who had trouble finding a permanent hutch. The character originally appeared in fanzines, small run magazines printed, edited, and distributed by comic book bands, before landing at Charlton Comics. When that company sold its stock of superheroes to DC Comics, Thunder Bunny suddenly became homeless. Red Circle, a superhero-friendly imprint of Archie Comics, provided an early home, as did Warp Graphics. Thunder Bunny then hopped over to Apple Comics, where his luck finally ran out. Thunder Bunny hasn't hopped up since then, but it's comforting to know that, as of his final appearance, Bobby hadn't yet permanently trapped in the form of his lagomorphic alter ego.
You know, I was thinking of something. Going back to the web and Power Girl.
Yes, Pow Girl. Okay.
Pow Girl. I'm sorry, Pow Girl.
Yeah.
Okay. Someone should bring this up to Seth MacFarlane. Take those two. They're supposed to be boyfriend, girlfriend, and the boyfriend's henpecked. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like if they ever get tired of Michael Warburton and Jennifer Tilly being the neighbors of the Family Guy, use their voices.
Right. Yeah, like, right? Yeah.
Well, we have defeated the world, evildoers. What do you say now? I don't know about you, but you're on the couch.
Yeah.
Really. I was thinking about it, that would be perfect for those two.
Yeah. But with Jennifer Tilly's voice, it's like, wouldn't you recognize her? How many people have her voice?
Well, if you notice, she's a well accomplished voice actress with one voice.
That's what I mean. It's like, wait a minute. How could you not know her voice?
Think about this. The same voice you hear in Family Guy is the same voice you hear in Monsters, Inc. is the same voice that you hear in when she's in the glass in...
In the Chucky movies and the Chucky series.
Yep, and as well as the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
So... why not? I mean, for a one-trick pony voice actress, she's doing damn good.
Well, she's popular. That's the whole thing. So... so what we got left here? Hold on. So we got about 10 minutes left in the show. Should I continue the news, or do you want to talk about any specific topic? Silver Regret says, Jennifer Tilly is how I picture Minnie Antoinette sounding. Okay, that's good to know.
And Ash Wednesday goes, Fran Drescher did the same thing, made a living off that nasal voice. Yep, well, you
it was
think
very
about
popular
it. Yeah,
just when you heard
Hotel
it.
Hotel Transylvania.
Yeah.
She did kind of parried it when she tried that hot sauce, and it cleared up her sinus passages. Like, I like this. I wonder how long it's going to last.
That's fun. Well, what's funny is Mark Hamill, when he does voice acting, if you know what voice to listen for, you know what to listen for. You know what I mean? Like, if you know his voice acting voice, you go, and here's a hint, guys. If you go back, watch every superhero cartoon from the 90s, pretty much he did a voice in it. It wasn't just the Joker. I mean, he did. He was like a, I swear, they said he was like a who's who, like every superhero cartoon from the 90s, Mark Hamill did a voice in it.
Well, if you think of it, and he even admitted, the basis of the Joker voice was when he did the prankster in the live-action Flash of the 90s.
Yep. And what he did was, he explained it, and he goes, and the Joker just has so many teeth. And he puts his big smile on, and that's how he finished the voice. And you hear him change his voice to the Joker when he smiles. He does his big smile, and that was the formation of the voice. Like, holy shit. And he just changes it. It was part prankster, and then he puts this big smile, this huge grin on his face.
Trickster.
And through that, that's how he projected the voice, and that's how he got the voice for the Joker.
Yeah, trickster,
the
I'm sorry.
The funniest thing, guys, I swear to God, from Mark Hamill, he was at a convention. He does Darth Vader's lines as the Joker. Oh, and there's a story I have to read about Darth Vader.
Oh, yes, I remember
tonight.
Reading this one. We got
to
get to it.
Yes,
yeah,
I have to find this. Yes. I got to find this one. I had this one.
And don't
I heard about
knock,
this earlier
knock.
In the movie. Oh, God, that was great. Oh, God, if you see Jane Silent Bob Strike Back, he has a funny line. This one is cock knocker. Son, don't you mess with the Jedi Master. But anyway, all right, last story for the night. James Earl Jones, this is from Saturday, James Earl Jones officially retires as the voice of Darth Vader. So, in 1977... James Earl Jones began voicing Darth Vader in George Lucas's Star Wars saga, and his instantly recognizable baritone helped Dark Lord of the Sith become one of the most celebrated villains in the history of popular culture. Jones was recently credited for reprising his role as Vader in Disney Plus's Obi-Wan Kenobi series earlier this year, but his fans later learned he never actually set foot in a recording booth. Instead, a Ukrainian-based startup called ReSpeature used AI technology and archival recordings to recreate the actor's dulcet tones. And this will likely be Lucas's film strategy going forward if they decide to revisit his character in future installments. A new Vanity Fair piece confirms that after 45 years, Jones has officially stepped back from bringing Vader to life. Fortunately, he's already given ReSpeature his blessing to clone his voice for new films and TV shows. After being presented with the company's work, Jones, quote-unquote, signed off on letting them record new dialogue using his likeness. This effectively guarantees that his familiar cadence will live on for decades to come. Obi-Wan wasn't the first time that Lucasfilm enlisted ReSpeature's services for one of their Star Wars projects. The company also helped recreate Mark Hamill's younger voice for Luke Skywalker's scenes in The Book of Boba Fett. The story doesn't say whether they handled his previous appearance in The Mandalorian Season 2. What's even more impressive is that they continued to work on Obi-Wan while Russian armed forces were invading their country. That's more impressive. Jones provided Vader's voice in all three films in Lucas's original Star Wars trilogy, later returning for Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith, in 2005. Once Disney took over the franchise, he also came back for Rogue One in 2016, but it sounds like his retirement from the role has been years in the making. In 2019, after recording a brief vocal cameo for Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, he reportedly told Lucasfilm sound editor Matthew Wood that he was looking to wind down his time as the character. Although it certainly marks the end of an era, this news isn't all that surprising. At 91, Jones finally seems like he's pumping the brakes on his acting career. In fact, most of the jobs he's taken on over the last few years have been voiceover roles, including a 6-episode stint as Vader in Star Wars Rebels and a second go-around as Mufasa in Disney's 2019 Lion King remake. Regardless, he still agreed to reprise his role as King Jaffa in Coming to America, which premiered on Amazon Prime in 2021. So there you go, folks. At 91, he's retired as the official voice of Vader. Anything else is just a facsimile.
Well, I mean, at least he's given permission to have his voice copied. Can you imagine what would have happened if they got someone even slightly off with the voice of Darth Vader?
Gilbert Gottfried! Ow! I'm the Dark Lord of the Sith!
I mean, that's what Black Knight running
plans now.
It kind of reminded me when, you know, they were going like, this is the first African-American superhero. Like, well, I hope he's African-American. I would have been a little pissed off when we heard Joe Pesci playing it. But, hey, I'm the freaking Black Panther. What kind of forever? No.
Well, I'm still Gilbert Gottfried. You are a rebel and a spy. How much time do we got? We got a couple minutes left. Before we get carried away with ourselves, you have to jump in, Viking.
Oh, yeah.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in this week. I know we got a bunch more news articles to catch up on. I'm trying to catch up on the last 2 weeks because we didn't do much news stories. But read those comic books. Read those superhero stories, novels, et cetera, et cetera. Watch those TV shows, those superhero TV shows, rather than those TV, watch those superhero TV shows and the superhero movies. I haven't done this in 2 weeks. I forgot already. Watch those superhero TV shows and superhero movies. And those other side, you know, those other related things in the genre. Andor came out, She-Hulk's on, Stargirl's on. I didn't watch last week's Stargirl yet. That's on. I don't know when that's coming to an end. And, you know, we got to protect our shows because, you know, this new Discovery deal, they're just scrapping shows for tax write-offs. It's ridiculous.
Well, I'm going back to Discovery, you can see it on CNN. They're chopping off anything that previously was considered leaning to one political view. And so, unfortunately, that's a lot of chopping.
Right. I think Discovery, they don't understand the superhero genre. They're getting rid of all the superhero stuff. Even HBO Max, it's like, I understand that after this season, Titans might be canceled. Doom Patrol, I don't even think we're going to get another season. I had a feeling this sale was going to be bad. So I don't know what the hell is going to happen now.
I think
Marvel's going to be it. We're not going to have any more DC shows.
They did say it was going to get bad before it get good, so they're not lying.
I know. We had it good for a while, folks. We had a golden age. 90 seconds left. We had it good for a while. Almost every night there was a good TV show, a good superhero show on TV. If worse comes to worse, you can go watch a Double D Avenger.
Oh, God.
If I find out the
Bunny Night movie crew is going to be watching that movie. Run.
I heard the show Final Space, I never got to watch it, but if you ever watch Final Space, they are removing it from HBO Max and destroying it. They're going to put it away forever. They're never going to show it again.
So in other words, one of those shows
like, we're done. We're not going to distribute. Yeah, they're doing one of those things like, oh, no, fuck you all. We're not going to show it. It's ridiculous. So don't know why, but that's the way they feel. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Mad Viking, you have anything you want to say before we are out of
nurse,
here. Your 17th.
Nurse Ratchet.
Yeah. Yeah. 10 seconds, quickly.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie, and thank you all. We'll be back next Monday night for more Paragon Radio. Stick around. Go tune over to dawnradio.live for your wonderful programming. And thank you all for tuning in tonight, guys. You guys rock. Without you guys, me and Mad Viking would just be talking about this stuff anyway by ourselves. Way to call it back, Bogo. Thank you. I always call it back. Oh, the Double D Avenger. See, if we start with it, it goes back to Double D Avenger this week. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you. You guys rock. Love you all. I think we're in the after party. We're in the after party.
All right. I got to get the show going.
Giants just had a big play. It was 3rd and 13. Oh, Dallas got called for a penalty, and he's hurt. All right, you go do that. I'm going to go check out the games.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later. Feel better. Save your throat. I'll see you Wednesday night.
Okay, bye.
Hopefully my Giants will be 3-0 at that point. Okay, bye.